Hello everybody, this is Loki, your way of Loki, and welcome to the No Hit Podcast. Here it's my job to interview extraordinary gamers in the realms of challenge running, whether that be no hit runs, completing games in their entirety without getting hit, speed runs, completing games in hours that would take minutes. Might have got that one the wrong way around. And other such ventures. Today's guest is Eden Issue, veteran no hit runner of the From Software games, including Dark Souls series, Demon's Souls, Bloodborne and Sekiro, as well as having completed various Bloodborne speedruns and having the world's first no-hit Bloodborne or bosses Blood Level 4 run, which requires completing all bosses at Blood Level 4, meaning without leveling at all during the entire run. No hit, of course. He is an early member and moderator of the Team Hitless community, a community of like-minded no-hit runners, and involved in rulemaking, behind the scenes, and as of recently, organising Team Hitless events, including tournaments, showcases, and guides. In this conversation, we go through the difficulties and strategies involved in doing low-leveled runs, modded runs such as the Scorch Contract or Cinders mod, and what Eden thinks makes a good mod, as well as an insight into the behind-the-scenes of Team Hitless, as well as Eden's involvement in the beginnings of the Team Hitless Discord. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Eden Issue. Right, Eden, thanks very much for coming on the podcast today. It's nice to chat. How's it going, dude?
It's going great. Thank you for having me. I did not expect to ever participate in anything like that, so... It was kind of a nice surprise when you DM'd me.
It's all good, man. So, I would actually like to begin with your YouTube and Twitch profile pic, actually. Both of which are the sign of a yin and yang. And I was just interested in the reason behind that, if there's a reason behind it, or if it's just like a really nice image, which it is.
That's something that was like, I sort of was interested. Like... Not that much anymore, but more of like a spiritual, like more so discovering yourself. I was kind of into it. I don't really talk about it much because, you know, if you're gonna sometimes say that you're like, oh, you think about like, you know, you're so spiritual, you don't really, you know, people don't really take you seriously. But I sometimes wonder about stuff like that, and I thought that's a really nice putting picture. This is actually a commission from someone, so it's like original, and the colors were nice, and
it does look very nice.
Yeah, and yeah, it's I was really enjoyed that, like thought about the yin yang. You know, there's something, there's a little bad in someone. It's all about like this, how to call it. And I forgot the word in English. Balance. Oh, here you go. Balance. Here you go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Additionally, that and your Twitch panels having that like planetary theme do look very nice. Like solar system like.
Yeah, I even have a solar system tattoo actually.
Oh, very nice. What of? Just of the solar system, or in particular?
Yeah, just the solar system. Yeah, I also was like really interested in like astronomy when I was younger. I mean, I still like, kind of am, but you know, not as much, obviously.
IRL gets in the way of like interesting stuff.
Yeah, it gets in the way of almost everything.
So let's go down towards speedrun or challenge running. What was your first introduction to either speedrunning or hitless, whichever came first?
My very first introduction to speedrunning, that was probably speedrunning, let's be real. It's like way more popular. Maybe soon, but at this point it's way more popular. And the first speedrun that I've ever seen, that was probably the game that I was like interested in when I was playing when I was younger. I was just wanted to know how to beat it like more efficiently. So that was probably like, what did I play when I was young? Probably like GTA or something. I was a nasty kid. Yeah. And I was like, wow, people actually do that. And they're like, you know, I didn't really understood back in the day. Why do they do that? Right? Because like, yeah, they beat the game faster. Okay, cool. Right? Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely was, I was definitely, I definitely heard about GDQ before I even started streaming. I started streaming like in 2018.
Okay.
I definitely heard about GDQ. And back then I was kind of interested in Souls games already. Like I really liked that series in general. So I definitely watched those speedruns. And even like the speedruns they used to run back in then, I know very well today, right? And yeah, because it's just a small and nice community, especially the Souls, like, in general series. It's, like, so close-knitted, and, yeah, it's really nice. But when it comes to Hitless, it was probably also, like, around 2016, 17, and it was obviously the heavy hop, right? Let's be real. I definitely watched him a little bit. He was very funny. I didn't really understand, again, like, what no-hit really is up until, like, I actually delved into it a little bit more. Actually, when I started even trying doing something like that, it was and like when Dark Souls Remastered came out, I remember Dark Souls Remastered came out, it was like April 2018, and I of course played the game. I got it on my PS4. Yeah, I was just playing it, and then I was like, I seen the Hop's stream, right? And he was doing like these, of course, like the remaster came out, and he wanted to get the world's first remastered Snow Hedge run, which is no different from the older one, but no worries about that. And yeah, I was just started like, what if I'm just gonna mimic him, what I'm doing, right? And I started like mimicking him a little bit. And then like, of course, it was fun for a little bit, and then I kind of like dropped it, right? But then my interest peaked again around summer 2018. It was around when I was finishing my university. I was finishing bachelor's, and I just didn't have really time for anything, right? But after I actually like finished my thesis, I had plenty of time, right? And I was like, what if I would just like stream it, right? And my my setup was like super super ghetto.
It's
I
super
had like,
sick.
yeah, I had, okay, so I had my PS4, right? I had a really bad PC. My first stream, my first like year of streaming was on the Intel Core Duo, which is like such an old CPU, right? And I was basically screen sharing from my PS4 to my PC, which was depending on the Wi-Fi. The quality was depending on the Wi-Fi, and then I would screen capture it with OBS, and my OBS would obviously almost kill my PC while I'm
Yeah,
streaming, but
definitely.
it would work for quite some time, and that's most of the time how I was streaming. So yeah, that's basically how I started off.
That's how I started as well, using a share play thing on
Yeah,
the PS4.
PS4 share, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
And not to say that my setup has gotten much better. I've now got a capture card, which is better, but I still have a very makeshift setup. I have like an ironing board, which is a desk, and it's funny, I've recently got an arm for my mic, and since I do it next to the window, or the TV's next to the window, I got this stand thinking, oh, I'll just attach it to the windowsill and that'll be all good. Ends up the clamp wasn't is too big for the windowsill to fix on, so now I've had to make this stack of textbooks and attach that clamp to that, and just made the stack heavy enough that it just doesn't tilt over. So.
I see. Mine is, I got a little bit better. Mostly because I got like a really decent PC for streaming. And well, I got a capture card. I remember when I got my first capture card, that was such a hit to my wallet. I was like, oh my God,
Oh, yeah.
why am I doing this? It's so expensive. Especially here, because like in Poland, electronics are usually sold by euros, or rather in the European price, which where our currency is like way weaker in that regard. So that was like 2 weeks of work for me to buy that capture card, but I really wanted to because I had fun with it so far. So
Did you start so as you mentioned there, people might have picked up you're Polish, correct?
Yes, I'm Polish.
So did you start streaming in Polish, or had you learned or learned English prior?
I have bachelor's in English philology, so it's basically like all everything about English all around, even like pronunciation, grammar, stuff like that, right? And I also finished my master's in English translation, so I have quite a bit of experience. But yes, I'm Polish. I studied English at university, and that's basically how I learned it like properly. I always really enjoyed like languages, and English just felt like a very natural choice to me when I went to university.
So did you start begin excuse me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I on this okay. So on this account, yes, I did stream in English. I had a different account that I started off like as I told you in April around the remaster. I was streaming in Polish, but I had like no viewers. So I was like, eh, whatever. And then after I got my degree, I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna create a new account, start from fresh, and yeah, just started streaming in English and. That's how it went.
How did you so was the hit list the first things you did on stream?
Yes, it
Yeah.
was.
How then did you progress or venture into speed running?
I definitely was doing headless for like over a year, like straight on stream. I got like every Souls game, I got Bloodborne, I tried Demon's Souls, but I really disliked the vanilla run. I actually got Demon's Souls Remake pretty recently, but I just never really enjoyed the 30 FPS janky emulator. I tried it both on PS3 and on emulator, and both sucked, so.
30 FPS at best in some cases.
Yeah. And when did I start speedrunning? I think I started watching someone called DJ Natty. I don't know if you know him. He was a Bloodborne speedrunner at the time. He's a very good DS3 speedrunner. Now he's, I think, retired. But I just like got into his community, and just one day he like kind of checked me out, and he saw that I'm doing like headless runs, and he started like laughing at me, saying like, "Oh, you shit at the game." And like you don't know what you're playing. I like, of course, like I'm not the one to get mad about that because I knew it was banter, right? And I was like, yeah, I am, but maybe one day I'll, you know, maybe one day. And you know, I probably just one day I just got bored and was like, why won't we try this? And I think my first speedrun was definitely Bloodborne All Bosses because Bloodborne is like my favorite game, and I just sucked. I just sucked a lot. Like, and I think I got like like the first noclip PB, then I kind of dropped it, then I came back, then I dropped it, and I do it like on and off all the time. I do some speed runs, I get bored, I do some hitless runs, I get bored, I do that. And I don't really stick with one game. I just try to play almost everything. I'm not being exclusive to one game, but I'm definitely like, I feel like I will be the best like in both hitless and speed running in Bloodborne for sure.
I do want to go more in depth in Bloodborne, but I do want to start with something just mentioned there to do with speedrunning categories. Could you explain what the difference is between in Bloodborne All Bosses, unrestricted and no clipping being two separate categories, and what the difference is between them?
In February 2020, there's been found a skip that Giant Cookie Jar found, and basically we baptize it as Wolf Skip because we use the wolf at the very beginning of the game. When you wake up, there is a wolf in the clinic, and we use that wolf to clip through the gate at the courtyard. After you open like the door to the clinic, you're outside, and there are two gates. There's one where you progress to the ladder, and there's one in the back, which is usually closed because you need to open it using the lever from the other side. However, Cookie found out that if you're gonna bait out a grab attack from that wolf, right? If he's gonna follow you from the clinic all the way to the courtyard and he's gonna grab you, you can clip through the gate that is closed that leads to Yusefka's clinic. And then you could just open the gate and it's open for later. And that allows you to skip almost entire early game because you don't need to kill Gascoigne, BSB, or Amelia. You don't need to kill them. You go straight to the woods from there. And also, around that time, there's also has been found a new way to freeze Shadow AI, which is basically a free fight, right? They just don't move. You clip for like the wall near shadows, and you drop down. And you're good. And the problem with that skip is, and why everybody's not doing it, one, it's extremely RNG. 90% of your runs in unrestricted will be just result in a reset in the first 30 seconds because the wolf is just not gonna do the grab, like literally 90% of the time. And yeah, and it was called unrestricted, which is like kind of a bad name, IMO. But yeah. So yeah, basically that. However, no clip. Not allow does not allow that skip because one, the routes differ significantly. They differ a lot. The boss order is completely changed in Unrestricted and in Noclip. And also, well, to be fair, and in opinion of a lot of runners and myself included, Unrestricted is not only more RNG, but also easier. And not a lot of people, at least from Bloodborne runs, I feel like a lot of people simply enjoy being challenged and enjoy like being more consistent than just rely on like not only an RNG route, and which the early game is significantly worse and reset heavy, and you know it's simply easy because later into the run you come back to the early game and you just smash like Gascoigne, BSB. You kill BSB like 40 minutes into an hour run, right? and like Pyro, yeah, stuff like that. So I feel like majority really do prefer running noclip, even though it's a slower category, because unrestricted actually saves you, I believe, up to 2.5 minutes, I think, when it comes to all bosses. I think in any percent it saves like even more, like 4 or so. And yeah, that's basically the whole difference. It's been separated at the start of like maybe like in the 3rd of 2020, I would say. Yeah, is that we decide to separate the categories.
What? So was all bosses the first category that you ran?
Yes, it was, because I just found it super fun. Any percent, I did, at that point, when I started speedrunning, I did a lot of any percent speedruns, and I found it quite boring, and I found it, like, what if I will just learn more, right, about the game, and I just started running all bosses. And of course, like, I wasn't consistent at all back then. I kind of knew the strats, I didn't exactly know what to do, how to perform them, but yeah, I just had a lot of fun. But, and actually, I think after my first, like, attempts on speedrun all bosses, I tried hit us all bosses, and I got it pretty late, because I believe it was like at the start of 2020. Yeah, I think my first speedrun was like 2019. I will actually pull up my speedrun.com profile, because I don't remember. My first speedrun was 2 years ago on May 2019. Yeah, in May 2019. It was horrible.
It's the same for anything starting into it, though. Like, yeah, starting exactly. Zero, starting hitless. It's the practice that makes that ends up showing up. Mm-hmm. Was there an order of the hitless runs? As you mentioned, you've done all of the From Software games, no hits. Did you go in order of preference or order of, I guess preference is the right word?
Preference for sure. Let's say that I'm not the biggest fan of these two. I feel like a lot of people aren't, right? I literally got bullied into doing this no-hit run. I literally hated it. There were like friends like poking fun, like, oh, you know-hit every single other game, but not these two. And I was like, okay, bitch. So yeah, so I did that. The first game that I no-hit was obviously the remastered, this one. Mm-hmm. Because I just got into it, right? I got it in like a month, I guess. And then I went to DS3, again on PS4, which was in 30 FPS, and it was horrible. It was like super... It was such a jump in like how you play the games. It took me like, again, around a month. And then I think from that, I jumped into Bloodborne. And Bloodborne, I got like in like a week. I really enjoyed the game. I really enjoyed how consistent it was. I think that's like the main reason why I enjoyed this game so much, is like... The strats are like so consistent. It's all about execution. There's like literally no RNG, especially in no hit run, I would say. When people say that there is RNG in hitless any percent Bloodborne, they just don't know.
I'm just trying to have a think. Yeah, I guess the only thing would be like potentially shadows, but those can be sort of nullified by patience if you just take your time a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And still like Bloodborne is by far the fastest no-hit game. I think my fastest no-hit is like 42 minutes. I got it on a tournament recently, actually. And I think the record is still Cookies, which is like 35, 34, something like minutes. It's super fast game. There's like 8 bosses in an 8% run.
So if you had to order the From Software games in terms of challenging enjoyment, how would you order them? Like, which ones did you enjoy doing them as no hit runs the most compared to at least
the most? Bloodborne, DS3 at the time. DS3 was a great game, and the bosses were great. I had to learn a lot about the bosses, and that was really fun to me. This one is not really about bosses, it's more about the areas, in my opinion, and the knowledge of what you have to do in the areas. Actually, if I would put Demon's Souls Remake in there, if it would be original Demon's Souls, that would be the last place. But I feel like it would be like that. Bloodborne, first, for sure. DS3, second. Demon's Souls Remake was pretty nice run, actually. I got it in, like, I think 2 weeks using the Magic Rat. It was really enjoyable. For me, at least. this one, because I, like, let's be real, I play Souls game mostly for, like, boss fights, and, like, maybe just enjoyment of the run. That is why I really enjoyed DS3. And,
how could you not love how could you not love DS2, then?
Yeah, I wonder how. Yeah. So, and this one, like, the... I don't know. For no hit run, all of those bosses are, like, kind of meh for me. I don't think they're really good. And then these two, man. First, like, every running section, it's kind of, like, boring to me. I don't know. It's, like, there's a couple of routes in these two, which is nice, I would say. There's, like, a Shulva, and there's a Tsildora route. But just,
Shulva's
like...
Shulva's nice.
Yeah, Shulva's really nice. But, like, everything... Like, in the running sections from bosses, it's, like, super boring to me. Yeah, I'm just not really enjoying. Especially, like, the infamous bow in DS2. Which you're, like, you know, that's how we go through a mana or, like, stuff like that. Of course, there are gonna be people that are like, oh, you don't have to do that. Or, like, but this is, like, literally easier. In a game that I hate running, I obviously gonna do the bow, right? And yeah, that's basically it. So, Bloodsborne, DS3, Demon's Souls Remake, DS1, DS2, for me, for sure.
So, the appeal of, or your favourite thing about these games, or doing them as no hits, is the bosses, is that then how you go into the all bosses categories, like in DS3 and Bloodborne, both being, like, your top two?
Yes, exactly. DS3 and Bloodborne are the only, like, games in which I do... all bosses running, except this was remake, but you know, it's only just one additional boss. Yeah,
if it's Vanguard, I can give it one huge extra right there.
I feel like I enjoy having really cool and consistent strats. I remember when I first time learned how to fight Emilia with an upgraded weapon, with like, it is a really meticulous strat. I loved it. I literally just loved it. That was like so cool that I learned that. And, like, there's plenty of bosses like that, and Bloodborne all bosses, at least. There's, like, plenty of them. Maybe not necessarily any percent, but all boss for sure. And in DS3, it's just very cool boss fights. It's, like, very responsive, very... how to call it? There's just... you gotta learn a lot about DS3. You just really do to, like... especially in the longer fights, like in, like, SL1 or, like, you know, BL4 or... you know, whatever. No upgrades are the new hardest thing, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I found, as you say, similar findings when learning Bloodborne and DS3. Like, Bloodborne, the strats are very, like, systematic. Like, if you do step A, step B, step C, you'll beat Emilia, for instance.
But it's not like they're easy by any means. No, they're not, of course not. Easy. They're not easy, but they're, like, just so cool to learn. Mm-hmm. I really, really love that.
I mean, sticking with Emilia, it's like if at step C you clip her hand or clip her leg, that's like strats done and you're sort of screwed then, because you're not going to be able to break the appendages in the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
And then DS3 is like quite reactionary, whilst you have to learn and then recognize the moves that the bosses are doing very quickly in order to get through a lot of them.
Yeah.
Within... I've not learned all bosses in Bloodborne, but I was curious about the DLCs, as they're quite infamously known for their difficulty in vanilla playthroughs. Is there any in that DLC that are either easier or harder in Hitless?
In Bloodborne?
Yep.
I mean, in Bloodborne there is only one DLC. Are you trying to compare Bloodborne?
No, the bosses within the DLC, sorry.
Ah, within the DLCs. I would say... Ludwig is not a problem. He's especially like right now at the time of recording this, there's like a really consistent strat for it, especially on leveled playthrough. It's like Emilia basically, but like a little bit different, right? Living Failures, there's also a little strat, which is like you face camp basically one failure. There's in this boss fight, basically they can spawn four failures, but at the start there's only one. And if you're gonna kill the one, then you can go over to the place where the second one is spawning and you can kill her as well. The other one is going to spawn and is going to try to shoot you with magic attacks. But if you're going to avoid them, then you'll be good. And there's only going to be two, so that's like a strat. And now with Maria. Well, with Maria, there isn't... okay, there is kind of a strat, at least in the boss's speedrun. In No Hitrun, it's a little bit different because you don't have specific strength and stamina requirements. And it's rough. Maria Headless is really, really rough, especially on BL4, because she can, for example, in phase one, she has like two stances, the one with a double sword in each hand and one when it's like joint and she swings like all around. That's like this stance you would like to avoid at all costs because the hitbox on this one is rough. And of course, the infamous power armor attack in phase one, which Shishan sometimes will do, and there's like literally nothing can do. You just gotta dodge it and just don't be stuck in the animation of like R1, L1 or something. Laurent is completely consistent on leveled, I would say. I did a speedrun strat on him in my hitless run, and it was like completely fine. And Orphan is genuinely my favorite Bloodborne boss.
Okay.
Because the fight with him revolves around you strafing every single one of his attacks and backstabbing him. And there's like so many variables. It's like these three bosses in Bloodborne. There's like so many variables that you can do. There's like so much different stuff that he can do in both phase one and two. You just gotta know how to bait out proper attacks. You gotta know how to respond to things that he does, have area in mind to not get stuck on like cuffed like tree hitbox, which is like somewhere near the arena. And recently there's been found a hitless, the speedrun strat for Orphan, which revolves into like parry looping him. Think like Princess, these three cheese. So yeah, it's a little bit rougher, obviously, than these three Princess cheese, but it's kind of killed a little magic to me in this one. But you know, for speedruns, I will have to learn. But I feel like if I would do a Bloodborne run again on all bosses somehow, I don't think I would do it. It's just too cool of a fight for me.
Yeah. I think a lot of people might have been surprised for that being your favourite boss, as I know a lot of people have had a fun experience, fun in quotations, with Orphan.
Oh, I know. He definitely has like a lot of power armor, and he definitely can be bullshit in one way or another. But like when you learn him and you actually know how to like respond to everything that he can do, it's like it's, and I'll be very like it's basically like a dance. It really is. I even made like a 20-minute video on every backstep opportunity I think you can do in phase one and two for like speedrunning and headless running, obviously. So yeah, I really do love that boss, and it's really great.
I do want to go into low-leveled stuff, but just one final query on the speedrunning aspect. Does doing the speedrun, or vice versa, doing the hitless running, tie into getting better at the hitless stuff? Like, is there anything that you've learned whilst doing speedrunning that's then carried over, or vice versa, with hitless to speedrunning?
It's kind of a different mindset to begin with, the speedrunning and hitless running. I would say hitless running helps speedrunning, and speedrunning helps hitless running. For example, if I wouldn't have low-level headless experience, I would fail a strat, for example, in Bloodborne, and I would have no clue how to fight Ludwig, which I know can happen to a lot of people in speedrunning. Like, oh no, what's going on? I just died to Ludwig, right? I can hold my own in this fight, and I can definitely work my way around. Whereas speedrunning helped me be more efficient, I would say, in my hitless running. Helps me think of a better route. Things have helped me what I need to do. And kinda makes me think in a very strict way. I try to be, again, it's like my quirk. I'm trying to be like really the most efficient I can be in hitless running. And you know, I at least back in the day, I was known to be like the speedy boy and have like a very efficient strats, and I take pride in that. I feel like if you're efficient at anything, that's just gonna, you know, it's just gonna be good for you.
Yeah, it saves time. It's the best way.
And if you mess up the strict strat or whatever, it's just on you, right? And you can take an easy way, but like I feel like in the games that I really do enjoy, I will be inclined to do things harder just for my own satisfaction, I would say.
I'd say with like I do very little speed running. It's not my thing really, but in the times that I've done it, such as like I did it for a Hollow Knight tournament, which was more on Deathless as opposed to speed, but having the hitless experience enabled when things went wrong to like switch back to that and go, okay, I don't want to die, I'm just going to go back to hitless and do this fight slower but the way I know how things. So I think like having hitless experience is really good for recovery in a run. Like if you're ever in a bad situation, you can always switch back to that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not really like a hitless experience. I wouldn't call it like specifically hitless, right? It's just a game experience. You know the game very well, more than in one way. You explore the game more than like just your usual one trick, right? And obviously you're gonna gain from that. You always will. Knowledge is power. In that case,
knowledge. So going into low level runs, that would be SL1 and BL4, which for people who aren't aware, that means completing a run in Dark Souls, which would be Soul Level 1, which means starting off as the Deprived class, I believe, or whatever the class is that is level 1, and then not leveling up any of your stats throughout the entire run. And similar in Bloodborne, which the lowest level you can be at is blood level 4, because that's the lowest character that you can start at is. Mm-hmm. What was the appeal of going into completing a no-hit run with those restrictions?
I just wanted more. I just wanted more. I just wanted to test myself even further. That's, like, I feel like the main drive for most of people. Like, and, yeah, like, for the same reason, right? People do any percents. And if they really like the game, they can go to all bosses. And if they really like the game even more, they can do even lower and lower. And the thing is, like, the further you go in challenge running, the more different it gets and more perspective you gain. That's for sure. You learn so much more. Like, I remember, for example, when I was doing all bosses hitless, Deacons were like, eh, whatever. Same with SL1, it's like, eh, whatever. And no upgrades, I started respecting them so much, it's insane. Or for example, same with Nameless. Nameless seems like a pretty easy boss if you know what you're doing, just roll into him, right? But like, the same thing, on no upgrades, you learn so much. Or like, Gale on SL1, there's like, so much more examples. In Bloodborne, maybe a little bit less, because I was trying to find the one-cycle strats a lot, which I did a couple of times. But especially, yeah, it just gives you... you learn so much more when you are put into reset environments and you have to do just something seemingly the same thing, but differently. And like, you know, you gain more perspective on that. Oh, maybe I'm going to change something here that I will keep doing for the rest of like my challenge running career. Or, for example... I don't know, oh, I see this Osiris Punish, right? I'm going to learn more about that. Different weapons, different levels, different strats, different running sections. There's like so much more that you can learn from doing stuff like that.
One thing you'd mention there was a no upgrades run. So a common way people get around the SL1 is by heavily upgrading the weapon so it does a reasonable amount of damage. Mm-hmm. And I believe your run was... all bosses, DS3, no upgrades, no infusions, SL1, correct?
My no upgrades. Okay, so I did SL1 all bosses with DLC, hitless, and only that. However, I did no damage, no upgrades, and any percent, because I just didn't really have time to do all bosses, and I haven't really got back to it yet.
Did that result in every boss being a very long fight, or was some of them you were able to find other means of doing damage or ways to speed up the fight?
If you're asking specifically for DS3, yes, there are mostly a different means of doing more damage. For example, that is why I really like SL1 in DS3. It's very diverse, because sometimes, you know, in other Souls games, you're mostly locked to, like, you know, the best weapon, and like, there's like not much other stuff that you could really do. In DS3, or maybe in DS2 is also like that, but in DS3, you get a lot of rings that change your stats. You get a lot of different weapons. You can get a lot of different weapons. I think and no upgrades run in DS3. It was only 80%. I used like 5 different weapons for different opportunities, right? I used like a bandit knife that caused heavy bleeding, and bleeding is not like reliant on your damage. I think it's reliant on luck because it's max percentage HP based, right?
Okay.
There's like a Earful Straight Sword, which I used for, I think, Princess, because I couldn't. You can find the Dex Ring, which you need to use to wield it, in Archives, which is after DSA, and that deals frost damage, which is like similar thing to the bleed. But if you deal frost damage in DS3, you can also reset the time. Like, you know, when you get frozen in DS3, you have like this little cooldown before you can get frozen again. However, if you're going to deal fire damage, but like the means of torch or like, you know, like spell or like firebomb, it resets. So I used to fight princess, like I had Earful Straight on one hand, torch in the other. And I would just swing a couple of times, right? It would do miserable damage on just normal R1s, but I was waiting for that frost proc, and then, you know, smack him with a torch, and again, and again, and again. Or like Black Knight Greatsword, which is not only a twinkling weapon, which is immediately better than any Titan weapon on Plus Zero. It had great stagger, and that is why I used it for Cinder, for example. Or, you know, infamous STS, Storyteller stuff. You can kill Half-Lights with it, with no problem. You can use it on Gale to cause, like, toxic damage. You can use it on Frida. There's plenty of opportunities like that. And, of course, like, your trusty broadsword and, like, normal dagger. What else did I use there? I heard that people can use also like profane capital or like rather profane great swords or like the great sword from what's his face from Gale to kill Midir, because Midir with broadsword and just like a gold pine resin is like 15 minute fight.
Yeah,
it's horrible. And yeah, it's like so much more stuff that you can do in the history. And in DS3, I would say they have the most experience. However, on BL4, there's not really anything like that. There's like poison knives, which it's not even really that good against most bosses. You still have to use your Soul Cleaver and just like full set, like gem setup. And you have Beast Blood Belt, which is like the most OP item in that game, but that's about it, right? It can only carry you so much. DLC on BL4 is significantly different than on leveled and a lot more levels.
So I've never like had a full understanding of beast blood pellets. So how does it exactly work?
All right, so that's a consumable, right? Beast blood pellet gives you more damage, but you also receive more damage, which is obviously it shouldn't be a problem in speedruns or hitless runs because you don't really take damage. But and also even in speedruns in like, you know, in non-really peach routes, you usually will not level up any HP. The Beast Blood Pellet gives you more damage, up to, I think, 70%. And it depends on how much the bar that appears on screen is fulfilled. So basically, when you eat the pellet, you have, like, the beast meter up top, right? And the higher it is, the more damage you deal. If it even does a tiny speck of that meter, and you see the meter on the screen, it's immediately 20% more damage. Right. Ooh. Off the bat. So that is crazy. That is like literally DS3 RTSR. Just like that, right? And the more damage you deal, the longer the fight, the more damage you deal, the better the damage gets, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Like you can pair it up with like a paper. There's only bald paper, which is like, you know, gold pine resin and fire paper, and that's it.
How does the beast hood or that stat or the clothes that you wear affect pellet?
So basically, yeah, the more beast hood you have, technically, the longer the meter gets that you see on the screen. It doesn't give you more damage particularly, but I guess you have a little bit more leeway, for example, to have that buff for a little bit longer. Every beast blood lasts for a minute and it doesn't change. But for example, if you have lower beast hood and you have like 70 and you have it maxed out, you will have it maxed out for longer then you have it with just, you know, with just less Bisuit. And Bisuit is affected not by stats. Maybe it might be by stats, I'm not sure. But mostly it's mostly by armor that you pick up on the planet. That is why every Headless and Speedrunner picks up the Hunter set, because one, it's super easy to get, super fast, and has a lot of Bisuit. And yeah, that's about it. That's how Bisuit works.
I got to a question in a sec, but I just wanted to bring reference to something you mentioned as you're explaining about no upgrades, which you mentioned getting the Dex Ring in DS3, which I just want to bring notice to, because this sounds very five-head thinking, because in, so as I explained about SL1 being no upgrades, this then also restricts what weapons you can use, because you won't have the necessary stats to wield certain weapons. So I just wanted to bring attention that that's putting on the Dex Ring increases your dexterity, which then allows you to use other weapons. So
yes,
some very five-head thinking right there.
Exactly. And this is a plenty like rings. There's some increased faith, some increased dex, some increased strength, and no upgrades. All bosses run, you basically pick up every single one, because there's always something useful that you can use.
A query I had, and I know several others I've had as well, is Moon Presence. Could you explain Moon Presence to do with Blood Level 4? And if you need me to explain further, that's fine.
And you see, that's the thing. With Moon Presence, Moon Presence on Blood Level 4 was literally the first time in my life in challenge running when I made an exception. And let me explain. So basically, on Moon Presence, Moon Presence has a scripted attack. Around 70% of your HP, she will backstep, and she will do a drain attack. It will put your HP to 1, right? It's like, you cannot iframe it, you cannot dodge it in any way. How we deal with it on leveled runs is that we basically nuke her before she even get to do this attack. You have to prep her limbs, break her arm, then you know, eat the pellet, eat the paper, break arm, break head, do a visceral with a rune. Basically, if you guys don't know, there's runes in the game which you can etch onto your character that have like different effects. And the rune that is like the most important in Blood Bowl bosses would be Claw Mark, which increases your visceral damage, which is important, really important with Moon Presence. And then you prep the arms, right? You had to also stand on a very specific piece of land, because because German and Moon Presence area is infamous for being slanted and infamous for missing attacks and like missing viscerals and stuff like that. You gotta be in a very specific spot. It's a very technical boss. I wouldn't say it's difficult. It's very technical. You gotta understand how the boss works. And yeah. However, on BL4, obviously you have no damage on BL4 basically. So on BL4 you have no damage, right? The visceral damage in Bloodborne scales with skill. In Bloodborne we level up a lot of skill. It's the visceral damage increases in increments, I think, of 5. For example, if you have 10 skill, there's a boost. You got 50. It doesn't like boost between 10 to 15. It's gonna boost again on 15, right? However, on BL4, I believe you start with 9 skill, which is not even enough for the second skill, BL4 character. So basically, your visceral damage is negligible, okay? It's really, really, really bad. There's no way you're gonna one-shot Moon Presence, even with Clawmark runes, because if you have 20% more damage of like a very bad visceral, it still will do nothing, right?
Yeah, 20% of extra of nothing, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And what I started doing, because I simply could not do it any other way, apparently there's a strat for that. Someone found the strat, the Colmer found the strat, but I've never seen it. I think he got it like being super lucky. So yeah, basically what I did to fight Moon Presence, I had to take a hit. There was just no way. It's a scripted attack. If she would do it on like maybe 30% of HP, maybe I could work around it, but this is so early into the fight that it's really almost, I'm pretty sure it's impossible and beautiful to dodge. So what I did is that I would put my HP to 1 by doing a specific set of jumps in the Hunter's Dream and by using blood bullets. So my HP would always be 1. So when I will go into the fight, I will not feel bad that my HP would drain, right? So I would fight German and Moon Prince with 1 HP because, like, there was just no other way, right? That was just a little exception that I had just simply had to do.
Yeah. It's treating it like the exact same way as Seath in DS1, whereby, like, Seath hasn't, like, the first time you meet Seath, it's an unavoidable attack, such as in this case where there is no way to avoid it. It then becomes an unavoidable attack.
Yeah, exactly. Just, like, embedded in the gameplay, right? It's just, if you leveled, you can avoid it. If you're not, then good luck, I guess. Apparently, like, from what I heard, Colmer, if you guys don't know, Colmer was a Bloodborne challenge runner as well that was trying to get main game, at least, like, almost main game, and he came up with a lot of cool strats. He said that you can farm, like, gems from the DLC Winterlanders, which, if you guys don't know, it's like a lady with a big, very many eyes headed lady, and they drop, like, gems, and you can farm gems from them, and then if you're gonna get lucky, you can, like, stagger all limbs and then head, but I've never seen that happen, like, ever. So, you know, if I could do it, I probably would do it, because it would kill me, but I didn't, so I decided to do it that way, which is not, like, even that much easier, because, like, the second phase of Moon Princess is just stupid. It really is. It's like, it has, like, the almost insta charge, like Osiris. If you guys don't know, Osiris has, like, an attack that is, like, basically in phase two, if he will face you, there's always a chance he will just charge you, no tell whatsoever. And Moon Princess has something similar with a little bit more tell, but still, it's really rough, and hitbox on that is really stupid as well. And it has, like, bubble attacks, which if she's just gonna backstep and they're, like, bubbles rising from the ground, and then they, like, spill blood on the half of the arena, I just stand on the other half and I'm like, what am I gonna do? I'm just standing here. I cannot do anything, right? So I basically, how I fought her is that I obviously would prep the limbs just like on level run, because I knew I would not get an opportunity to visceral her later, so I would just do it. That would deal, like, maybe half HP. Yeah, like, pretty decent, right? And rest of the fight, I would wait, actually for that drain attack. And I would also upgrade my gun, I think, to +8. And with Bone Marrow Ash, which is like a buff you put on your gun, similar to, like, Bolt Paper works, you just dealt quite a bit of damage with that. So I just basically, with the head down, with, like, Molotovs, with the gun, stuff like that. And that's how I fought her on Before Hitless. It's a horrible fight. It really is. It's, but also on leveled, I feel like on leveled it's not that bad. On Before, it's horrendous. It's stupid. But yeah, so that's basically how my Before Moon Presence worked.
Do you have any interest in the Chalice Dungeons?
No, absolutely. No. I absolutely despise that part of the game. It's not fun for me. It feels like a filler content. A lot of people are saying, yeah, they are not that bad. You get, like, unique bosses. All of those bosses are shit. Let's be real. They are just so bad. And I heard also people that are like, yeah, it's a filler content, but also I'm playing Bloodborne. And, like, yeah, go ahead. I can play Bloodborne in the main game, right? It's like, I really despise it. I really do. There's only one person that did all bosses, like, true all bosses with chalices, and that's Ghost and Ghost, and I don't think I will ever do it. I despise chalice that much.
Yeah, Ghost on Ghost, she's they've such an impressive run that I can't imagine anyone.
She's the best Bloodborne runner by far. Yeah,
I can't even imagine, in fairness, like, trying that, especially with the dungeons. So, having done such a variety of runs, how do you approach learning a new run? What's, like, the process that you...
Learning a new run. Like, a new run on the game I know, or the new run completely?
So, say, if you said DS2 was your last From Software run, how did you then approach DS2 to learn it?
Well, obviously, I watched a lot of runs. I know almost every single runner in the hit list, so I watched plenty of runs. I asked for advice around. I made save files for, like, things that I think I would have problems with. And yeah, then I would just start running, you know. I would just like give it a run or two. And of course I would wither down my PB more and more. And if I got hit, I really hate that. A lot of people that do no hit runs do that, and I really hate that. A lot of people just say, bullshit, I practiced it like one time, it shouldn't have happened. But like, there's always something that you could have done better, and there's always something. And I always approach people like, yeah, if I got hit, it's like 99% of the time, it's my fault. Like, it really is. So I was like, well, okay, I just gotta look up another way, or like ask people around what to do, right? Because like, this is clearly problematic to me. And, you know, I would get better at more section of the run, on more bosses, on the running sections, and so on and so forth. And that's how I would eventually get it, you know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because there are so many good save state options with so many games, with the irony being your favorite being the one that doesn't have that aspect.
Yeah, that is true. Setting up save files for Blood Moon is kind of a pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. So yeah, just to explain for people who might not know, with save states, I'm not too familiar with the software or how that works with games outside of PS4, but from what I've seen, that they can make a save state where they can just reload in the same position, and they can have like a list for each boss, so if they want to practice a certain boss in like DS3, they can load a save file and it'll be immediately there. Which the people can share and download, so they don't have to run through it all themselves. With Bloodborne, you can only really do that with a USB stick or also the PS Plus. But that mm-hmm. That requires playing through on a profile up to the point where you want to practice, saving that before you've done the boss, because if you've done the boss, you're screwed, because then you'll be saving after having done the boss, which I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
But and then setting up separate profiles, so separate characters, and going up to different points, and then saving all those profiles onto a USB stick to then reload each time. It is
yes,
a bit more labor intensive in for Bloodborne being a PS4 exclusive.
Oh yeah, for sure. You can also like make. I know some speedrunners do that. Like for example, you have a Ludwig save file, and you have this Ludwig save file on a PC, but then you gotta juggle the USB stick a lot, right? You're gonna put the Ludwig save file on the USB stick, you're gonna do it like 10 times in a row? Okay, fine. We're gonna do like Orphan now, right? We go to USB stick, delete the Ludwig save file, back to the Orphan save file, pull it out, back to console, you know, then download from there. It's like, it's a lot of work. It is a lot.
So I want to shift away from hitless and towards mod runs, which you've done mm-hmm. a few, being Demon's Soul, Dark Souls, I should say, Scorch Contract, Daughters of Ash, and in DS3, the Cinders mod. Could, for someone who might not be aware of the mod side of Dark Souls, what is some differences between the vanilla game and some of the differences these mods put in?
Well, mods are basically the fan modification of the game, right? They basically can tailor the game to their liking, however they want. And I really do enjoy the mods in which you are getting really challenged. Scorch Contract is the best mod I think I have ever played. It's the same game, but it plays completely different. It's like, it's really difficult. I really did enjoy it. Daughters of Ash, not that much. It's more like story-based mod, I would say. It says kind of a different story. In DS3, I did Cinders, which I enjoyed quite a lot, but I did it super long time ago, like 2019, I believe. And there's also Convergence mod, which is like the newest, hottest mod. Everyone is playing it. I still haven't played it. I tried it once on stream, and literally developers of this mod were in my stream telling me I'm a dumbass because I can't install it and I just couldn't do it. And yeah. If there is a good mod, I will 100% play it. It's mods Obviously, when you keep playing the same game over and over again, it can get pretty stale, but mods definitely, from time to time, for me at least, are a good pace, a change of pace.
So, say a modder was a modder of Dark Souls, Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne was listening. What makes an enjoyable mod?
What makes an enjoyable mod? Something that will make it feel familiar and different at the same time for me. I feel like Scorch Contract nailed it very, very, very well. It was basically the same game, but you had to adapt. If you guys don't know, in Scorch Contract, if you kill a boss, the game starts basically the same. But if he starts a boss, you get a stipulation put on you. You got like, what you got there? For example, the specific enemy would spawn more. Or like, you would get your health drained a lot, right? And stuff like that. Something that will make the game more challenging and feel a little bit familiar at the same time. It feels really, really good to me.
Yeah,
I would say that would be a successful mod for me. Oh, here we go.
So we'll go into, so you're a moderator on Team Hitless, which is a no-hit community, both Twitch team and Discord community. What was your first involvement, or how did you get involved with Team Hitless? Or learn about Team Hitless, should say.
Obviously, I was into Team Hitless, like... Okay, so when I first started doing no-hit runs in DS1, I didn't even know it existed. I just started doing it because of Hob, right? Because I enjoyed watching him, and I enjoyed doing it on my own. And then a friend of mine, Tonsu, came by and is like, are you doing this to apply for Team Hitless? I was like, what the hell is Team Hitless? And then I learned about Quilla. I learned about Hob. I learned about Faraz. I learned a lot about all of those OG... like Hitless runners that don't even really do no hit runs anymore. Well, Faraz isn't, but most of them is. And yeah, when I got my run, I was like, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, yeah, just DM Squilla. I'm like, I don't want to DM him. He's like, he has like 2k viewers. He will never read my message. But I just DM'd him and he like responded. And I'm like, oh wow, okay. I felt kind of weird. And I was like, I think number like 20 something, 27 in the team. Again, I didn't even really know. It was just like starting, right? And obviously, then, I think in the early 2019, there's been a tournament coming up. There's been a charity tournament, if I recall correctly, hosted by MacRaptor. And, you know, all of those people that I really looked up to, right? Like Hop, Faraz, like Skula, participated in that. I was like, wow, that is so cool. I wish one day I could be one of them, right? And that was like a different game tournament. I remember back in the day, I was running Bloodborne, and I, in my opinion, I was pretty good. And I guess the word got around, and someone told me, like, hey, what if you're just not gonna DM MacRaptor, right, to do it, to, like, participate in that? I was like, okay, I will, right? And I DM'd him, and he said, like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, oh, fuck. Well, too bad, right? But then... he came into my stream and was like, yeah, you got a spot, kid, basically. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Nice.
And I ended up winning the tournament.
Oh, very nice.
In the end. Yeah, that was like literally first time, and I ended up winning it. And then there was another tournament, which I think was team-based one, and I used to run DS3 with Hob. Okay, so there was like, it was trilogy tournament. I was running DS3. Hob was in my team. And Oz was in my team. Oh. Absolute legends, right? Yep. I was no one compared to them, right? So, yeah, we ended up winning that as well. I fed super hard. I got like 4 hit run. That was so bad. And Hob actually super carried and got a 0. And the last tournament I was involved in, basically those tournaments, I mentioned those tournaments because they're really important in how our community shaped up. And basically, you know, more and more people got interested. More and more people started doing those runs. There was a high demand, right? And the last tournament I participated in for MacRaptor, there was some more, but the last one I won was the very first Sekiro tournament. It was Sekiro Deathless tournament. And again, super big names. Gino. Arts. You know, who else was there? Like Blueberry Brioche. Like, everyone is, like, really, really good at the game. And I ended up winning that as well, which was, like, super big for me, right? And that's how, basically, like, I sort of grew my stream.
Just absolutely thrive on pressure.
Yeah. I always enjoyed competitive environments. I was always like a really competitive person in especially in games. I really did enjoy like both physical sports and, you know, multiplayer games. I used to just play like a lot of StarCraft before I started doing, for example, Hitless Runs. I used to play a lot of like CS, League, everything that had a ranking system, I definitely played because I just wanted to test myself how good I would be, right? So I really, really did enjoy it. And, you know, beginning of 2020, the MacRaptor stopped doing tournaments, right? It kind of fizzled down. And there's never been a proper Hitless Disco. There's been one that Squilla made, but it was super dead, right? And it had like nothing. Like, no offense to Squilla, but this Discord was not the best, right? So I decided, like, okay, I'm gonna do a Discord. I'm gonna invite people. You can share strats. You can talk about anything related to Hitless Runs. We will give out roles and so on and so forth. So I did. It was at the beginning of the first COVID pandemic, like at the start of 2020. It's when I made the Discord, and of course, like, I'm the owner of that Discord. Then we talked to Squilla about that, about, because he's a very big streamer. He's very busy, right? And we said, listen, I know there's a problem with inviting. There's like, it's like a running meme at this point that you gotta wait for a Team Hitless invite for like weeks. And that's like, you know, it's because of Squilla, because like he's so busy that he cannot get around to it, right? So we were like, Squilla, we can verify those runs for you. We're gonna send you names. And, you know, that's going to be goes much smoother for you. And he's like, fine, okay. So we keep doing that for a long time, right? And of course, the Discord keep growing. There's like 3,000 people or so in this one right now. And, of course, there's like Spanish server now, Italian. There's like a lot of sub, rather, you know, the same Discord, the same purpose, but, you know, our would be the main one that would send out the invites to the Twitch team. And recently, actually, we, from the Squilla himself, he brought it up. We didn't, like, he wasn't, like, pursued into it or anything. He brought it up, and he said, like, if we want to, he can give the Team Hitless ownership to the Team Hitless channel, so every mod can now invite people. And now we have the full ownership. Hopefully you don't have to wait for for an invite for that long anymore. And yeah, that's how I basically got involved. I don't want to talk about myself like that, but I feel like some people thought that I would be a good like leading character in that. I feel like I had a lot to talk about in the rules as well, because there's been like the huge writing of rules, obviously. A lot of people are saying that the rules are still bad, but honestly, they were way worse back in the day. They were like, you know, there was like this non-written Hitless code, right? And basically, you know, there's been more and more amends to it. There's been like more and more of like, what can we do to make it even more clear? What can we do so people will stop asking like the weird questions, or like, what if that specific thing is going to happen? And there's like, the reason why Hitless rules are so convoluted is because we try to accommodate for every single opportunity. It just has to be that way, because it will eventually get confusing for someone. And that's fine. I'm fine with like amending or like slightly rewriting the rules, right?
Yeah, a classic one I remember was, is magic banned?
Oh, yeah. Is magic banned? Yeah. It never was. It never was, right?
Yep.
It was just people not willing to use that, right? Because for some people, using magic would... And I can understand that, right? I can understand that sentiment that for some people, using magic would mean that the run would be easier, which is not necessarily true in the most scenarios, right? Because, like, the magic run and the traditional melee run is, like, completely different at this point.
Yep.
Or like, can you use a shield? Well, to block? No. To parry? Yes, of course. But some people think that you cannot parry with a shield, so they used to parry with barehanded. Like, what's the difference?
Oh, I remember that, you know? With Pontiff, yeah.
Yeah. Or like, you know, you cannot use shields, so you cannot have grass crystal on your back, because that's a shield. Mm. You don't do anything with that. It just gives you a buff, you know? It's like, and, you know, we made a lot of amends for those, and yeah.
I want to go to some of the new event stuff that's now occurring. Mm-hmm. But I just want to ask, what's something that happens behind the scenes with the moderators that people in the general community might not be aware of, like the amount of work that goes in, like behind the scenes?
Biggest deal, I feel like, would be inviting specific people for the tournaments and setting them up properly. Yeah. We have community from all around the world. We have Australian runners, we have Asian runners, we have European runners and American runners. There's a lot of that. And to make them come at the same time from every part of the world at the same time is a big deal. We gotta set up those times really straight. So I feel like that would be the most difficult part. Obviously, we have like, you know, oh, someone's going to invite this one, this one, this one, and you're going to do this, this, and this, and this, right? We like share the struggle, sort of, right? So that would be the most difficult one. Obviously, hosting is kind of, especially I'm like, I'm a horrible host. I hosted the first, like the event, Team Hitless official event. If you guys don't know, we recently started doing Twitch as well. We're doing like a little Twitch events, mostly showcases, not like anything for money or anything like that.
So, sorry, just to explain that just a bit. Uh-huh. So by that, it means there is now a separate channel, Twitch channel called twitch.tv/teamhitless, where there are now events, yes, tournaments, and also there's been commentaries, one guide, I think, maybe more I've not seen recently. So that's what that means by a separate place now. Sorry, carry on.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, what was I? Yeah, inviting people, hosting, you know. I remember the last time I hosted, I was so mad. My computer was simply refusing to cooperate. The OBS would crash. The transition scene would not work. Someone would not be heard on stream, but he would be heard in Discord by me. And like, there's so many technical difficulties to handle a Twitch stream like that. All right, so there's two. And three, a lot of people that say that, yes, I want to help or I want to participate, not from mods, but like, you know, anyone from outside of the mod team that is like, yeah, you can. And then they change like last second their ideas, and like the entire schedule is just gone, right? You have to rewrite everything. And it's like, it happened a couple of times and super, super rough as well. And yeah, I would say that would be top three. What's going behind the scenes?
It does seem though the events have been incredibly well received. Like the very first one, which I was commenting with Spiral on the whole night, just seeing the numbers it was reaching for that event, it was pretty mad. Yes. Stuff going on. It must,
the support has been incredible. It's outstanding to the thing that, you know, something that I started doing just moderately 3 years ago, it will grow to this size that we have today. It's insane. And it keeps growing every day. And that's so, 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 so beautiful. You know, to see that something that you saw at the very start and became this, you know, it's so insane.
And there's still a lot to go. Like, yeah. At the time of recording, Hob has just, the Happy Hob has just completed the God Run 2, at which he was at 26,000 viewers at the end of it. So there's still plenty more interest in Hitless. I think like that's like passive audience we could always trickle down and increase even more. Mm-hmm. Just mentioned about how you've been involved in a lot of tournaments and the competitive aspect. On one of these Team Hitless events, you commentated instead Bloodborne again. I believe it was Ghost and Clamps, I think it was. How did you find...
It was Ghost and Clamps, and it was me versus Artie, right? Yeah, I remember that.
Just interested how you found the commentating aspect as opposed to participating.
I really love commentating. I really love... Yeah. I always like more so informative. Of course, like I meme a lot, but like I really, really do love sharing my knowledge to people that are willing to listen to. I really do enjoy that, especially that a lot of people seem to think that I have a lot of knowledge about stuff like that. So if they want to listen to, I'm more than happy to, you know, say a thing or two about it. I really do love commentating. Maybe not as much as running, because running is, you know, adrenaline, it's really, really fun. But commentating is, it comes really, really close to me. Because it kind of scratches a different itch for me, right? It's more of that, like, I'm also like a teacher IRL, so maybe that also helps for me. So, yeah, I really do love telling people something about that I'm really passionate about, right? So,
I've seen some of your All Bosses Bloodborne guide, which I think is very well done. And as well as, because I've done a few guides myself, but I take the voiceover approach, just because of, well, different reasons, but your Bloodborne or Bosses run is a completed run whilst you're doing live commentary, which I think is like such a good way of doing it and requires a very like additional level to the game to be able to do that as well.
I honestly will probably soon remake that, because from that was right before Sekiro came out. I learned so much more about that game that it can definitely be updated as well. And yeah, I'm probably going to do it a little bit differently as well, because I wanted to do it for more of a stream format as well, because I was streaming at the time as well. I feel like this one is going to be voiceover by me. I will just probably do the run, different, like, you know, different alterations, and then talk through them and stuff like that.
If you could give one piece of advice for a new no-hit runner, or new speedrunner, whichever your preference.
If you stop having fun, especially if you stream this, if you stop having fun with the run, I would just stop if I were you. It's, again, hitless running is for everyone, but if you're not having fun, I would say just stop before you're going to get burned out and actually hate something. And also, don't think everything in like RNG terms. If you got hit, you definitely messed something up, and I would go into that. I would try to learn why. Just try to learn more about the game you're playing. Just and get involved. Get involved into the game. Think how you can possibly change something that is not going your way. So that would be me for me.
If one game could be released tomorrow, either an announced, unannounced, or a sequel to a game you don't think will ever exist, what game would it be?
Honestly, Bloodborne on the PC.
PC.
I don't feel like sequel of a game, because sequel of a game is not necessarily what we also want. Look at these two, right? That's not really what I wanted. But I feel like Bloodborne on the PC would make it so much more enjoyable for me. And 60 FPS, and like, you know, and be able to use all of that save states and like cheat engines and stuff like that. But if we would talk not in Souls games, I would say StarCraft 3, because I really do love StarCraft.
So there's a very large mental aspect to doing these runs, either speedrunning or no-hit running. Could you tell me about a time when a run was taking its toll and how you managed to get past it?
Oh, definitely Beautiful Bosses Hitless, by far. I really, really wanted to get it. Not only that was world's first, but it really mattered to me a lot because of Colmer. And I can go into in depth of that if you want, but it drained me. It was really, really rough because it felt at the time that it was extremely RNG. I knew it wasn't, but my mind was literally lying to me that I can't do it. And I took plenty of breaks from that run. I was like, no, I can't do it. I'm going to do something else. But I will eventually go back to it because I was so determined to actually get it. And yeah.
You mentioned Fakolma, who was the Twitch streamer you mentioned earlier.
Yes. So if you guys don't know Colmer, he was a Twitch streamer. He was mostly doing challenge runs. He was doing a lot of other stuff, but he was mostly doing challenge stuff. And he is genuinely the kindest soul I know. Every penny that he earned from stream, he would give to charity. The way he talked, the way he invited people to his community was unheard of to me. He was the kindest person I know. And I didn't talk like he passed away, but he didn't, right? He stopped streaming because one, he was always very open with his mental problems. And I feel like that attracted a lot of people to them. He was very open about how he was depressed. He was very open about, you know, how different things helped for him. And he attracted people, I feel like, that was similar to him. People that struggled, people that, you know, people that had problems. He was one of those people. He was them. He was one of those people, right? And like, I was attracted to him too in that regard. It was just like something very new to me that people, you know, especially that I was basically starting off in like this Twitch world. Like, I didn't know many people, but like, just the way he talked, the way, you know, he did everything, it was just so insane. He's like literally the kindest person I know, and I will probably never met anyone like him. And at some point he faltered in his mental health. He's fine, however he stopped streaming because he said he is not doing good enough a job on entertaining as he used to, and he said that he wants to step away. And he was really good Bloodborne runner as well. He was running Bloodborne with me and Ghost and Ghost a lot and Lethal and a lot of those old school headless Bloodborne runners, right? And he was the first person to attempt that run. And he was the first person to try actually things for it, to innovate, to do something more with this Beetle for a headless run, all boss headless run, which was not gotten at the time, right? And when he retired, he said that he's very sorry that he didn't do this run, but he just can't do it anymore. And that's something that he really will want to see someone achieve in the future. And I promised him, I literally promised him that I will get it. I will get it. I was the first one. Me and him were also racing to get the first main game, which I, in the end, achieved. And I also promised him that I will get all bosses, like, you know, for him. Because he's just, like, the kindest person on the planet. And to solidify that, even, I got a tattoo of our favorite quote on my body. I got a quote from a doll that's... It says that, may you find your worth in the waking world, which meant a lot to me and makes a lot of sense to me as well, right? To just like, if you feel any time down, just feeling like you're worth living is sometimes enough. And yeah, and I tattooed it because I want to solidify that, and I eventually got that. And when I got this, I wasn't happy that I got this. I was more so happy that, you know, I fulfilled my
promise.
what I had to do. And I was very happy about that. And I really hope Colma is also gonna maybe watch that in the future, and you know, and we'll see how big of an impact he had on community and on me especially. Because thanks to Colma, and I will say it legitimately straight, thanks to Colma, I started looking at, like, at the world quite differently, and that's all thanks to him.
When you find your worth in the waking world, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. May you find your worth in the waking world, yeah.
What's in the future plans of Eden Issue?
I really want to get better at speedrunning. I already have pretty good times, but right now I'm of course, I wasn't doing Bloodborne for quite some time. I came back to it and I started doing... I kind of want to get any percent glitchless recce because it's really close. I'm like 30 seconds off. I feel like I can do it. Maybe I'll grind this. Maybe I'll grind some old bosses again to get even better times. I just want to get better at Bloodborne in particular because that's literally my favorite game. Recently, I don't really have that much free time because I started a full-time job. When I started streaming, I was in university, now I'm out, I got a full-time job. I don't really have time that much to stream anymore. I resort to something that will be quite entertaining and good for me as well, which speedrunning fills that niche for me pretty well. And you know, I'm just going to be speedrunning Bloodborne at the moment. And of course, when Elden Ring is going to come out, I'm going to play this a little bit for sure, depending. Because I didn't like Sekiro that much. I mean, I like Sekiro, but I don't really like challenge running it. So I hope Elden Ring is going to be like that new love for me, you know.
And if people wanted to check you out, where would they be having a look at?
My Twitch stream, twitch.tv/EdenIssue. I sometimes tweet funny things at twitter.com/EdenIssue. I have a Discord server, and which we have like regular hangouts with movie nights. And yeah, stream would be probably the best part of it. I stream when I can, basically. Yeah,
all good. Well, Eden, I really appreciate the time. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
I really did. Thank you again for having me.
No worries at all. I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it as well. And have a good rest of your day. And I shall catch you in the next episode.
See you guys.
If you want to hear more conversations with amazing guests, be sure to head over to youtube.com/WaveLoki, Loki spelled with a C, or waveloki.com/nohitpodcast.